have not finished races well in the past are going to do it today. Here they come another time. Into the last lap, into the final.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm the host of the
fun fan for years.
F1Weekly.com podcast.
We're going to do tire changes maybe next year. I think we
Desiree, I'm your fabulous, fierce female Formula One fan.
Fisichella, bravo!
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 538. November 24th, 2011. Steven?
This F1Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads or Google Ads or whatever ads you want to click on our homepage. Darn it, click on them because you know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, two PDRs? You've got to be kidding me! Massa says, Rubinho, you must go now. This weekend, that you must go. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the king of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm good, Mr. Rogers. How about yourself?
Absolutely outstanding. When I go and see news like this, I am completely flabbergasted. Pedro de la Rosa coming back in 2012 to drive for HRT.
Why? What? Couldn't they find a better young talent to take that seat?
We saw what happened when he went to Sauber briefly, and Sauber said, yeah, fine.
Well, Sauber went, let me see, you're slow, and we get somebody who's got money.
The whole thing is absolutely ridiculous, and I think there should be rules. If you have the same initials as a younger driver, you should be banned. That's my personal opinion, but still, come on. I mean, we have got all these young drivers coming up from GP2, World Rally, World Series by Renault, and what? I mean, we're trying to get rid of Rubinho, we're trying to get rid of
Yarno
Trulli, and here comes Pedro de la Rosa back again on a stallion?
Next thing you know, Alex Wurz will get a seat.
Well, luckily, Alex Wurz will be the FIA steward in Brazil, which is a great news.
Which means he'll be lobbying for a seat.
Yes, and that's what Pedro de la Rosa should be doing. Stewardship.
Le Mans Series.
NASCAR.
NASCAR.
But it is, you know, it is bizarro, to say the least.
Yeah, I can think of a lot better. Come on, let some of the other open-wheel talent that we've got coming up that's been chomping at the bit for some of them for years. Give them a chance. We know Pedro isn't very fast. He's maybe really good at feedback. He's a perfect reserve driver because he can give you feedback, but without in-season testing, he's pretty much wasted. So, I don't know. I really don't see. Is McLaren giving HRT engines or something?
I don't know, but obviously he's Spanish. HRT is a Spanish-based team, and now you can understand his developmental attributes, if we could put it that way. But still, he's so long in the tooth. There's so many young drivers. I mean, what about Carlos Sainz Jr.?
There are plenty of other Spanish-speaking drivers available.
Yes, so it's quite bewildering, but there you have it. I will have to get my...
Get Romain Grosjean and get him some of that language stuff for Rosetta Stone, and he can learn to speak Spanish.
Bravo, bravo, bravo! But there you have it. I find that unbelievable. But still, we've got Brazil. It's the last race of the season, Stephen, and of course Felipe Massa has gone to Rubinho and said, "Rubinho,
don't become a paid driver."
Don't become a paid driver.
Stay in Brazil after the race.
Stay in Brazil. Watch your children grow. He's recommending that Rubinho retire. And Rubinho's not going to retire. I mean, well, Not on his own accord.
Yeah, exactly. Not voluntarily, he's not.
And it's a sad state of affairs, but Williams has got Kimi Raikkonen coming back. They're probably going to keep Pastor Maldonado. Rubinho is out. Now, there is Renault.
Well, HRT seems to be hiring the old guys. He's probably going over there. Or he's trying to kick Julia out at Lotus.
I you know what I say? I think Rubinho should go over to HRT with Pedro.
Exactly.
It'd be perfect. Old man river.
Exactly. They'd have an excuse for being slow.
That old man river. He don't say nothing, but he knows Rubinho. So, yeah, I don't know what to think about it, but all I know is Rubinho's not going to go away, even though he's recommended by his peers to retire. He's in Brazil. He should wave to the fans farewell, but he's not. And it's a possibility that he could go to Renault. Obviously, we got the news today, or yesterday, that Kubica will not be able to start the 2012 season. I think there's some stalling on his part and his management team to try to get into Ferrari for next year. They know Massa's gone.
Yeah, well, the other thing, too, is that it's his final year of his contract, right?
Totally.
Yeah, so it doesn't really necessarily matter when he gets back. I think it makes more sense for him to come back when he's ready.
Exactly.
Fully, completely, absolutely. You know, we've had a sports icon here in the States who just came back from injury and took his time getting back and was spectacular in his return. So I would hope that Robert does the same thing. The only problem Robert runs into is, where does he drive? How does he get into race shape when you can't drive a Formula One car?
I agree. And the key, I think, is Ferrari is the only team capable of providing that test availability with like a 2009 car in Maranello. They could call it a photo shoot or whatever.
Well, Kubica's probably got enough money in his bank account that he could probably go get a GP2 ride for a couple of races just to get on a track, but that's not the same.
No, I agree, and we'll see what's going to happen, but this whole thing, this whole scenario is bizarre to say the least.
Well, not so much so in the fact that, you know, the injury he suffered was very serious, and probably as little as 5 years ago would have ended his career.
I absolutely concur, but still, I think he's still a fighter. I want to see him back in Formula One. I want to see him try to get back in, and I don't think Lotus Renault GP is going to be able to accommodate his high talent now that they're going to be called just Lotus. They're no longer a works team. Renault is really basically just an engine supplier. I think that
maybe slowing his return a little bit.
Absolutely.
Making it easier for him to go, hey, I think I need a little bit more time.
Absolutely. There's no reason not to. Why shouldn't he pick and choose? Because the opportunity is there.
Well, ultimately, it makes more sense. If he's looking to jump ship, it kind of makes sense to come back middle of the season when the car has been proven a dog and he gets in it and can improve on the times of the drivers that have been in it.
Well,
makes him look better. Makes him, you know, showcases his driving talent.
And that's what he does best. But still, we don't know what's going to happen. And let's go back to Lotus. I mean, their situation is sort of interesting. Of course, we had Vitaly Petrov, who went on a tangent on Russian television and freaked out and just
bad-mouthed the team
completely. And obviously, they're probably going to go with Romain Grosjean. Vitaly Petrov probably will keep a seat because of the finances he brings to the team. But still, very interesting stuff. But on the other hand, Vitaly Petrov had a good reason to go off on a tangent, really, because the team, I think in the end, really blew it. Everything went wrong, by the fourth race.
Well, they had a really good foundation, but the problem was it was built of sand. There was really nowhere to go with it.
Yeah. I mean, the forward-facing exhaust sounded interesting, and at the beginning...
And it was effective at the beginning.
At the beginning, it was effective.
Apparently didn't leave any room to go forward.
No, apparently that was the end of the road.
Yeah, they pretty much started at the end.
Yes, but still, on the other hand, you have to give them kudos for going with a radical design, because if you don't, you're in the dust.
Well, especially when you're coming up with teams like Red Bull and McLaren, who have engineering talent coming out of their ears and have really have a really huge head start on a lot of teams just coming out of the gate.
Yes, absolutely. So it's going to be interesting. Brazil's going to be exciting, the final race. And when it comes to possible drivers for next year, Jean-Éric Vergne, who did an outstanding job, top of the timesheets for Red Bull in Abu Dhabi, is certain to replace one of the Toro Rosso drivers.
Certainly a really strong chance. If they have plans of using him as Mark Webber's replacement in 2013, then they almost have to put him in a Toro Rosso seat next season just to give him track time.
Absolutely. And really, in Brazil, I think the talk of the town will be the silly season, which is going to be wrapped up into this one race. We don't know where Adrian Sutil is going. We know that Hülkenberg will have a race, and it's a contractual agreement between his management and Force India. I mean, we could sit here and weep about Rubinho, but it's final. I mean, there is no more he could do. Kimi Raikkonen is certainly going to be there. I know it's not final.
There's the opportunity for that to happen, but I can't really see Williams taking Rubinho back.
There's no reason to take Rubinho back. Williams wants to take a step forward. Sam Michael has left the team. He's gone to McLaren. They're looking for a reshuffle. Patrick Head, I don't know how long he's going to be hanging out, but still,
I think all he is a figurehead. He is Patrick Head, the figurehead, because he's got to be somewhat out of touch with the forward movement, and knowing that, but you need to bring in the younger engineering talent to get those fresh ideas for somebody who's going to think outside the box. Patrick Head's used up all his original ideas 10 years ago, and you need some younger talent, not only in the driver's seat, but back in your design labs.
Absolutely, and I think Williams is depending and hoping that Renault will be able to bring that back to them. It's going to be Renault Williams again in 2012.
Well, you
great
know,
legacy.
Renault power,
Renault
and drive
package.
Train can win races, yes, if you put the right chassis around.
We've seen that. We know that can happen. And I think Williams is hoping to get back to that. And the other key point is having a driver that's completely out of control in terms of speed, and that would be Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah. You've got to have someone of that talent, or somebody other than Rubinho. Rubinho's a number two. He's been a number two since his days at Ferrari. He got kind of close at Mercedes.
At Braun.
And what did he end up there? Number two.
I think Braun lifted his spirits so much that he believes that he deserves that 20th year. I mean, he's already broken the records for Grand Prix starts.
Longevity.
He just wants that. He would hate to end on 19 and not be able to make that 20th year, that anniversary, okay, that just puts it all together. And I think he would be so much happier to end it on a 20. But I'm afraid.
I'm sure that he's got enough money in the bank. He could buy a seat in one of the bottom three teams.
Yeah, but can't we just end it all?
I know. I'd like this. I prefer to see him step out with some grace and walk away on his terms instead of being shuffled out the door on his way to the retirement track.
The pasture, where a four-legged Rubinho is now at.
Where he can go wrench on go-karts and clean up after bratty kids.
Well, no, I mean, he could possibly have a great career here in America. Rubinho, Tony Kanaan's best friend, he could come out here and certainly do some IndyCar racing.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. I think that elusive 20th year in Formula One is definitely going to be a tough one to accomplish.
It'll be interesting to see.
Anyway, we've got a great race. Great season ender.
Great season.
Obviously, we know who the champion is.
Race,
no, it's a great track. I know you love it. Now, I've been watching some of the weather.
Ooh, we got water. Oh. We got water on the track.
Water.
That makes this track so much more fun.
Well, I hate to say it, but it's raining right now in Sao Paulo.
Woohoo!
So, I think it's going to be moist.
Good. I like it. Sao Paulo is a good track.
Yes, it's a great track. I think we're going to have moisture. Of course, Ferrari want to end on a high. Jenson Button's hoping to win. We know Lewis Hamilton is all pumped up. He's finally broken up with what's-her-face. He wants to win. He thinks he's out of his...
Funk.
The slumpo. Oh. And it's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be a McLaren-Red Bull-Ferrari fight to the end.
Yeah, who's going to slash Vettel's tire this week?
I'm not sure, but still, it's going to be intriguing. Bruno Senna, this will be his home race. To be honest with you, I think this will be his last Formula One race. I don't see Bruno Senna coming back. He really...
Not with
I mean,
Renault.
He did great, but he didn't do fantastic. He's gone. I believe, for sure, Romain Grosjean will be here next year. But nevertheless, this is going to be a great race. This is going to be interesting. The final race, we don't want to talk about the lack of a Grand Prix in the United States for 2012 because really it's become a complete schmozzle, and it's almost embarrassing for us Americans that we couldn't put it together.
Well, it comes down to the fact that people weren't talking to people.
People.
And apparently Tavo Helmund was kind of very much of the same ilk as the two previous U.S. Grand Prix types that we had in the States.
And yeah.
He got the deal, but he didn't have any money.
Yeah, no, it's a disaster, especially for all of us who live here and we're expecting to go to the race, expecting to book our hotel rooms.
I find it very sad for the city of Austin because they've put in so much effort into, you know, making this happen. And
I know, and it would have been a great race, but we'll see what happens. Nevertheless, Steve, final Grand Prix... The season is almost over. Your thoughts on the season as a whole and any predictions towards the end?
Well, I would be very surprised not to see Sebastian Vettel on pole.
Shocking!
For the final race of the season.
Well, he's going for the big record, you know. Beating a lot of people.
Exactly.
This could be the 15th pole, which is huge.
Yeah, monumental. Do you know where the DRS is going to be here in Brazil?
Single DRS zone. Not sure where it's going to be, but it's fairly obvious where...
It's got to be that basically coming up the hill and down to the start-finish.
Probably. But still, I think it's going to be... I certainly don't think it's going to be processional. It's going to be down to the wire.
Also
it's
be interesting to see how Pirelli's new compound works.
They're going to be experimenting with 2012 compounds at this race. And, I don't know, McLaren is... made some statements about how they don't think it's going to be very significant, and I sort of agree with them. I mean, I think it's more talk from Pirelli than in actuality, but still, I think this is going to be a fantastic race.
Yep. And as far as the season goes, it's a good season. They ended kind of early with, you know, Sebastian Vettel's absolute dominance. I've kind of liked the two previous seasons, you know, we're kind of down to the last race. It's like, hey, who? Hey, how's it going to happen? What's going to happen?
But, you know, in the end, with Sebastian Vettel having the puncture in Abu Dhabi and going out of the race, this is his big chance to make a huge, huge statement saying, you know what? This is Stinko, and this race I'm going to take, and I'm going to win it.
Going to dominate this race like I've dominated the season.
Absolutely. So we're going to see Vettel trying to win. And he's going to try to... He's going for the triple crown.
Yep.
Absolutely. Pole, win, fast lap of the race. Guaranteed.
Let's see if he can pull it off.
Because, well, that's his style, completely. So it's going to be very exciting. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I am sad that it's the end of the season. But we are in November. It's been a long season.
It's a little bit late in the year to be still racing.
Exactly. I feel fatigued.
It's all going to start up again before you know it.
I know. So
that is the one nice thing about ending in November. It's like a full month less that we have to wait for the season to start.
Absolutely. So I'm really looking forward to Brazil, Sao Paulo. I believe it's going to be a rainy weekend, which is going to be more exciting. But there you have it, Steve. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message from Bell Auto Care.
Do you own a European or Japanese vehicle and live in the New York tri-state area? Then I want to tell you about Bell Auto Care. Bell Auto Care is a Bosch authorized repair shop with over 35 years of dedication in providing honest, friendly, and up-to-date repair and preventative maintenance to vehicles like yours and mine. Not only is this the shop in the New York area to take your European or Japanese car, they are F1 and MotoGP enthusiasts as well. So go to bellautocare.com to check out their special deals, F1 and MotoGP news, or for more information, and ring their bell to care for your car.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Karachi King himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards. Today in the Motorsports Mondial Pipeline, we will venture out to Macau and all the way back to Miami Homestead area. A barrel of lawsuit may be gushing towards the Williams Pedrovesa sponsorship deal. And in the goodie bag, we have a moment in motor racing history, plus a bonus feature, another edition of Byfield Bypass, all the way from Australia, mate. He's back in action.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes. We start with the 58th Macau Grand Prix, one of my favorite races in the year. Just like I like the Po F3 race, I'm very interested in this race also. A race which has been won in the past by the likes of Senna, both the Schumacher brothers, and Sato-san. German driver Marco Wittmann won the qualifying race on Saturday. Second was Felipe Nasr of Brazil. Main event on Sunday was won by Daniel Yoncadea in a thrilling finish over Nasr, who was second again, and Wittmann was third. And my thanks to Mr. Interraptor for providing the link, and I watched the race live, which I really, really enjoyed. In the past, I have listened to the audio, which is in English, Portuguese, and Chinese, so that's also very interesting. But you know what they say, seeing is believing. Marco Wittmann should have won the race as he dominated till a full course yellow bunched up the field, or also known as caution. On the restart, four drivers ganged up on him and pushed him back to fifth. Wittmann put a spirited drive to get on the podium, and he's really bummed out that, you know, he was so dominating, had the fastest lap, and really he had the field covered. But that's the way it goes in street fights. Yoncadea, who has also raced in the U.S., in Formula BMW, becomes the first Spanish driver to win the F3 Macau Grand Prix. And like Alesi in Montreal, he was in tears on the final lap. There was a big crash, and actually late in the race, Kevin Magnussen was very lucky not to be injured in a terrifying crash. I have not seen the crash, but apparently his car flew and went into the fences also. And so the last lap was behind a safety car, so all through the lap, Daniel was crying, and I was longing for Mama's paella. So our congratulations to him. He's a pretty good kid. I met him some years ago. Very easy to deal with. And let's see. He's like stunned that he won. Because he was, I think, started from third row. And it's a street race. You know how that goes. World Touring Cars. They were also in action in Macau. Opening race of the weekend was won by Rob Huff over Chevy teammate Ivan Muller. Ex-Grand Prix driver Gabriel Tarquini was third in a Seat, and Seat used to be part of Fiat Empire, but now they are under the VW umbrella. They're doing pretty good, especially in Europe. The Seat Leon Cup and Cupra, whatever it is called, they are pretty popular series like the Megane series. Huff won the second race also, but third place by Muller allowed him to retain his championship. In the globalization of motor racing, in sixth place was Mehdi Benani of Morocco. And it's always good to see drivers from non-traditional motor racing countries. Well, Williams, have you been following the story on the possible looking into the sponsorship, mega sponsorship by Pedrovesa, the National Oil Company of Venezuela, of Williams.
Absolutely.
Yeah, some guys in lawmakers have said, you know, this kind of dollar amount should have had the approval of the parliament. And who knows, the parliament in Venezuela may mean Hugo Chavez's decision, but I'm not sure. So we'll see how things pan out. So there might be some hanky-panky going on there. You know, the guy who brought the Grand Prix to China, he's behind bars.
Correct.
And I don't want to get further, it gets political, but let's see what happens. And this would be a big blow if they pull the plug. You know, if they put an oil embargo on Williams, that will not be good. Massa, you talk about Massa, you know, at Sao Paulo, his hometown. Once upon a time, he delivered pizza to the Ferrari team before he became a professional racing driver.
When he was a wee lad.
Exactly. And now this Sunday, he will be taking part in his 100th race for Ferrari.
And so, still bringing pizza to the team. Nothing's changed. Really.
Yeah, but he's probably now driving a nice Fiat Panda or something to bring the pizza instead of some Volkswagen truck, which is very popular
Correct.
In Brazil.
Well, actually, he probably brings it the last 10 yards. He probably has someone bring it to the track, and then he just walks into the garage with it.
Thank you, Steve, for clarifying that. Yeah, pizza delivery is very important in Formula One. Okay, now here is interesting. These are all late-breaking news. Arrest warrant has been issued for Mr. Vladimir Antonov. He is the guy who owns the commercial rights to the World Rally Championship, also has like 60% stake in Snoras Bank from Lithuania, I believe, which is on the side of the Renault or whatever they are called today and tomorrow. So this is not looking good for them. And as we have more info next week, we shall let people know. Such as life. If you do the crime, you must do the time.
I'm glad we're all so straight and narrow over here.
Yeah, we are straight and narrow. Okay, NASCAR, this is a sad day in American motorsports. It's all over. The season is over now.
It's done?
Yeah, can you believe that?
I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. Before Formula One did.
Yeah. I've got jerky left in the fridge.
Oh, wow. Can you freeze them till like February when Daytona comes around?
I'll have to.
It's jerky. It'll last.
As forgotten.
Yeah. Tony the Tiger Stewart pounced on the championship and took it away from Carl Edwards by winning the season finale in Homestead, FLA. Very impressive run by the Indiana native, winning 5 of the 10 races in the chase. And Tony drives for himself. In days gone by, he was a star in the Indy Racing League, the IRL. Yeah, and he also owns the Eldora Speedway, which is a very very special, prominent dirt oval track in the annals of American motorsports. Australian V8 from Sandown, family affair in race 1, as Rick Kelly is the winner and brother Todd also on the podium in 3rd. James Courtney was 2nd. Win number 10 of the season in race 2 for Jamie Winke. Mark Winterbottom, also known as Frosty, was 2nd, and Will Davison 3rd. The other day, Speed TV, maybe a week or 10 days ago, showed the race from Tasmania, I believe.
Yes.
And I watched it and enjoyed it very much. Kind of a small track, a strange design.
Yeah, really short for a road course, but interesting.
But the hairpin left end was pretty interesting. But I enjoyed the race very much, of course. Okay, now we come to Hape 3, also known as GP3. Testing underway this week in Valencia, and Mr. Favre and I were talking about this before your helicopter landed.
Thank you. I was delayed over at the Presidential Palace.
Yeah, no, I understand. On Wednesday, fastest driver was German Daniel Abt, who I believe is the son of Christian Abt, ex-racing driver and owner of Abt Sportsline, people who run a team of Audis in DTM. Looks like Connor Daly will continue in this series again in 2012, which is good. Very surprisingly, I've never heard of this kid. A young American driver by the name of Ethan Ringle has also signed to race in GP3 in 2012. He did some karting and did some Formula Enterprise, which I believe is the SCCA series. But, you know, this is a typical example of basically asking to blow away $500,000. I mean, what happened to Formula Ford or Formula Renault, or even U.S. Formula 2000. This is too big of a jump for a young kid. And it's the lack of experience, not
this
the talent.
Be a mistake by management.
Yeah. Costly mistake. And we let's hope we are wrong.
So. Of course. Yeah. I mean, if he does well, we are wrong. And we've been wrong a couple of times in the past.
Oh, yeah. A few times. And will be in the future also. Man, the biggest thing was, to me, what I thought, things have gone totally opposite of what I thought. One is Mr. Schumacher. Yeah, and I never thought that if he was teammate to Alonso or Hamilton, I can live with. But I never thought that with Rosberg it would be like this. But there you go.
Hey.
And the other is Sergio Perez.
A lot of surprises.
Yeah, good for them. Okay, talking of DTM, Martin Tomczyk, the man who won the championship this year for Audi, is bailing out to race for BMW, or as the natives would call BMW, starting next season. BMW has already signed Canadian Bruno Spengler and Andy Priaulx of England. Now a little word on faces going places. This is our radar on the young racers. This thing, I just have a feeling that this kid is going to be huge. Nyck de Vries, NYCKDEVRIES. This young kid from the Netherlands is on a fast track and in good hands. Managed by Papito Hamilton and already in the, I think it's like 16, 17, already in the McLaren Driver Development Program. He has now won back-to-back karting world championships. He won last year in one category. This year he won again, and that is super incredible.
Is he being spoken to by Jos Verstappen?
No, I don't think so. Jos Verstappen, Jos de Bosch, you know, he has his own son, Max, that he's trying to... I know Jos used to be married to a lady by the name of Sophie Kumpen, who I think had won a karting European World Championship. And I'm not sure, but I think Sophie is the mother of Max. But you know what? Has been a naughty boy. You know he had some issues like sending threatening text messages and showing up at her house. So let's hope. It's winter in Europe anyway, that cooler heads are prevailing now. But this was a few years ago. Okay, next year, Nyck de Vries will make a single-seater racing debut in Formula Renault 2-liter. So this is a very exciting...
And this is a good step.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there you go, making sense.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I had... he was supposed to come to a race. There was going to be a race in Canada. I had, bought a ticket to go there. Mm. And I was in touch with his dad to come and do an interview, and also with this Dutch young girl. She's very good. Bertske Visser, she was just racing in Vegas last weekend. So, but we need to get in touch with him, and there's a good chance I might be somewhere in Nederland in April of next year.
Fliegelflugel,
absolutely. And this is somebody I really need to. We need to establish our media relationship. So when they get to Formula One, they don't forget the poor people of Paris.
Exactly.
Okay, now it's a time for a moment in motorsports history. Yeah, copyright issues have prevented us from getting some real music, so it's one more time, please. Thank you. That really sounds like a Chinese bugle.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, history of Macau Grand Prix. Macau is Monte Carlo of the Orient, both in terms of gambling and racing. This ex-Portuguese colony now generates more gambling revenue than Vegas. You know, we're educational at F1 Weekly also.
Absolutely.
It's important to know these things. And what happens in Macau sometimes spills into Hong Kong, but that's another story for the Hugh Hefner podcast. We won't get into details here. So as far as motor racing is concerned in the streets of Macau, the first Macau Grand Prix took place in 1954. And the winner was Eduardo de Carvalho of Portugal in a Triumph TR2, I believe it was, according to survey and Wikipedia. In 1962, the race was won by Arsenio Laurel in a Lotus 22, and he would become the first two-time winner of the Macau Grand Prix. The Filipino driver was killed in the 1967 running of the race when he crashed his Lotus and the car caught fire. Arsenio's father was president of Philippines, and one of his brothers later became vice president of the Philippines, so well-connected family there. In 1966, Mauro Bianchi won the race in his Alpine Renault. He is the grand papito of GP2 driver in front of F1 Weekly, Monsieur Gilles Bianchi. Yeah, Mauro Bianchi, as you can tell by the name, is a very Italian name. Mauro's father, and you know, he was the brother of Lucien, who was killed at Le Mans. The father moved to Belgium when kids were very young. So from Italian, they became Belgium, and now Mauro and Jules, they live all in Brignoles, in south of France, near Marseille. Yeah, I was actually, you know, talking to my friend, Mr. Olivier Meno, who handles the affairs for Jules Bianchi, and I says, man, if he's signing for F1, whatever team, I'm flying to Nice, and we go and talk to him at his, you know, hometown, Brignoles. He said, it will not be a problem, but let's see what happened. He was also one of the names linked to Williams. But it's very lonely. They say it's lonely at the top, but it's very crowded at the top in Formula One. A lot of dollars are moving, you know. It's like a Butterfield auction. 10 million, 10 million. Narain, you got 12 million. Boom, you got the seat. Oh, Petrov, 14 million. You got the seat.
What about Rubinho?
Rubinho, you know, he might survive if Raikkonen doesn't come. But I think his bigger problem is not the old Finn, Raikkonen, but the new Finn, Valtteri Bottas. Because Bottas is managed by a group which includes, as principal of the group, Mr. Toto Wolff, the husband of Susie Stoddart, or Susie Wolff now. And he's also one of the shareholders in the Williams Grand Prix. And Bottas, as I thought, won the GP3, so he's making a very good... And he's getting up there in age, you know. Maybe a season of GP2 might be good for him. But, you know, if the team is behind you, then, you know, it's like politics, you know. When your man is doing, no matter what, he's never wrong. So it's the same thing in racing, you know. If the team is behind you, if they like you, if you make a mistake, oh, it's a learning experience. He will learn from his mistake. But if you're on a short leash, then, you know, well, it's like Sebastian Bourdais. I mean, they were out to chop that guy, man. I mean, I felt sorry for him. But, you know, that's welcome to the world of motor race, Formula One. Okay, Ricardo Patrese, one of the drivers I really, really want to meet in my life before I kick the Coleman, is Ricardo Patrese. Because I was very young when he came, and he was very young and got involved in that 1978 Monza tragedy. And I was always a huge fan of Patrese. But so far, I've not been able to connect. Okay, Riccardo Patrese, the ex-Grand Prix driver from Padova in Italy, won the Macau Grand Prix in 1977 and 78, so very impressive. In 1981, Bob Earl, who I believe is from this area, Northern California, he was racing very much so when I got here in IMSA GTO, GTU. In 1981, he became the first and remains the only American to win this race. And I was hoping very much that Rossi will go this year and see what he can do, but he was not in the race, as we all know. Roberto Moreno, real nice guy, also known as Pupo, won the final race for Formula Pacific Cars in 1982. And that's when bodies started slamming. The current format for using Formula 3 cars was started in 1983. Winner was, I think you've heard of him, Ayrton Senna da Silva from Brazil.
Yeah, troublemaker.
I don't know about that. This race started the friendship between him and another driver who was in the race, Gerhard Berger. You know, I don't remember exactly. Some years ago, I did an interview with Gerhard Berger. What happened, if I remember correctly, but it was something of this nature. Senna wins the race, and Gerhard Berger, I think, had the fastest lap. And the organizers, by mistake, gave the race-winning trophy to Berger and the pole position to Senna. And then Senna came, you know, hey, I need my trophy. And says, apparently, there's some issue on the racetrack or qualifying. So, according to the story I read, it was actually an interview with Berger. Berger, to this day, has the race-winning trophy from Macau, a race that was won by Senna. So, interesting there. As we know, they became very good friends at McLaren. Other winners who became well-known, and some of them also raced in Formula One, were Mauricio Gugelmin in 1985. When Senna raced Formula Ford in England, he and Mauricio were renting a place together. And Big Mo, as he was called in America, when he raced in America, he raced many years in IndyCars, and I'm sure you remember he was with PacWest team. Martin Donnelly won the Macau Grand Prix in 1987. 3 years later, his racing career was over when he survived a serious crash in practice for the Spanish Grand Prix at Jerez de la Frontera or something like that. You remember this accident, right? It was one of the most vicious I've ever seen. He was ejected, still strapped in his seat, from his Lamborghini-powered Lotus. Now we come to Michael Schumacher. He won the race in 1990. This is when they were doing two races and you aggregate time. Mr. Hakkinen, Mika Hakkinen, that is, had some issues with the German. Reason can be traced on YouTube. All Mika had to do to win the race on aggregate time was to finish second behind Michael. But he found out, as many others have, passing Michael is not easy, and trying to pass him on the final lap at Macau or in the tunnel in Monte Carlo. You may be singing Hello Walls.
Hello Wall.
One of your favorites?
That's one of my favorites for sure. That's a great song.
Yeah, it's Willie Nelson, man.
That's quality.
He also wrote the song Crazy for Patsy Cline. So he's up there in the annals of songwriting.
Thanks,
crazy,
Nasser.
Crazy.
Crazy for feeling.
No, for Formula One. Okay, DC won the race in 1991, and some years later, he would meet Michael Schumacher in the rain at Spa. Actually, it was in the McLaren garage when Michael came fuming.
1998, but, my favorite.
Yeah, you were at that race.
I was at that race.
Another of my friends.
I'm the one who broke him up.
Really?
Stopped the fight. Yeah.
Wow.
That was the beginning of the F1 Weekly moment.
Oh, really? A moment in motorsport history. Okay, another of my friend, Mr. Robert Schwartz, he was also at that race, all the way from San Diego. Okay, Ralph took the honors in 1995. His victory was third in a row for a German driver, as Sascha Massin and Jörg Müller won the previous two Macau races. So good for Germania. The 2000 race was won by local yokel André Couto. Sato-san won the race in 2001, and then Tristan Gommendi, Nicolas Lapierre, and Alexandre Prémat went three in a row for Viva la France. Yeah, and Tristan Gommendi came and raced here in Champ Cars in the dying day of Champ Cars. Nicolas Lapierre came at, both Nicolas Lapierre and Alexandre Prémat were at the Laguna Seca A1 GP race. Lucas di Grassi won in 2005, and 2006 winner was Mike Conway, who was looking all set on his way to F1. Today he races in Indy cars, as GP2 series was not kind on him. And this is another guy that I really thought he was on his way.
Me too.
He won the British F3
in style. Looks fantastic.
He won the Macau race. He was on his way.
And then the door was shut.
Yeah, two seasons in GP2. I think he had one or two wins. And, you know, his first season was with David Sears' Supernova team. And when he left and joined another team, and I asked him, you know, what happened? It was so good and all that. He says, you know, the competition in GP2 is very different than British F3. So, and, you know, he's not the only one who will find out when they get there. Italian-speaking Swiss Eduardo Mortara won the race in 2009 and last year, and this year raced in a GT car at Macau. And I was looking at the, you know, some information like fastest lap, blah, blah, blah. His name showed up in two categories of fastest lap ever at Macau, one in F3 race, and I think this year also he had the fastest lap in the GT car race. Yes. Italian speaking. Now let's take a look at the track. The Macau circuit is 6.12 kilometers in length, which is about 3.8 miles. So it is a long track, almost as long as Road America. The Macau Grand Prix Museum was opened in 1993, and Herr Schumacher's winning car is on display here. Now, this is very interesting. They also do motorcycle races on the same weekend. In 1988, Kevin Schwantz became the first and so far the only American winner. So good for him. Thank you for listening to History of Macau Grand Prix. Time now for some Mongolian beef at Panda Express. Mr. Rogers is already flashing his French Express card.
I never leave the Palatial Studios without my French Express card.
Wow. How many places it is accepted?
Taco Bell.
7-Eleven.
And El Pollo Loco.
Oh, wow. The crazy chicken. The crazy poulet.
Okay. So now we have a segment.
We have two segments now. Which one would you like to go first? The Byfield Bypass or a page from the calendar?
Let's go with the bypass first.
Okay, here is Mr. plus tax. Lucien Byfield, our friend in Australia, Adelaide area, and he was supposed to do a monthly, but you know, things happen and everybody has their priorities. So he's back in circulation. We thank him. We appreciate his efforts. And he's also known as Loosh Baby. So here is his remembrance of a race that he was there in person in his home country. Take it away, Loosh.
Welcome to the Byfield Bypass. I'm Lucien Byfield, but you can call me Loosh. This month, the 1989 Australian Grand Prix in Adelaide, and I was there by the start-finish line on the pit straight. To set the scene, it is remembered firstly for the animosity between Alain Prost and Ayrton Senna after their coming together in Japan the fortnight before, where Senna took a big risk lunging from possibly too far back, but with Prost making a dodgy half attempt at closing the door, taking them both out temporarily. Now, as a Prost fan, I was convinced it was all Senna at the time, but Prost moved much like Schumacher did in Jerez 97. The atmosphere was electric, for Senna came to Adelaide as the wounded victim while Prost was the new world champion, pending an appeal over the Japanese result. And also, which most people forget, Senna had to win in Adelaide to overturn the title positions. Senna was all over the press, crying foul, stating that God shows him the way, etc., etc. It was all a bit extreme, really, but made great TV and enlarged the already huge interest in the feud. On the Friday, in front of me, Nigel Mansell in the number 27 Ferrari was first out on track. That car was gorgeous. Prost drew first blood in qualifying, but it was on the Saturday that Senna did his usual, taking pole and making Prost look tame. The scene was set. Senna needed to win and also to have an appeal go his way for being stripped of victory in Japan for a slim chance to be world champ. But race day weather gave a torrential downpour. It was so bad that Prost, Berger and others all tried to get the race delayed or stopped. Yet it was Senna who gave the world one of the most iconic images of himself ever seen. As everyone else was running around flapping their wings, stressing out, Senna sat motionless in his car the whole time, fixated with revenge and with a point to prove, regardless of how dangerous it was. After all, he was the Rainmaster. Winning was all that mattered. It was a picture of pure concentration, focus and determination that only Senna could take to that level. So, to the race. It eventually started in the heavy rain, with Prost taking Senna on down the main straight, but yielding wisely, as Senna was not going to. After one lap, to my horror, Prost pulled in the pits and retired. It was all about safety. He was concerned, and he remembered Pironi having a severe accident in the rain years back. And possibly in hindsight, Prost was the wisest driver there, as Nelson Piquet crashed into the back of a car and had his helmet cracked by the tyre of the car he hit. Somehow he had no injuries. Other cars were crushing out left, right and centre. Then Senna spun, giving us one of Murray Walker's best comments ever. He yelled, "Spin, spin, spin!" It was hilarious. Senna rejoined but eventually rammed up the back of Martin Brundle and came around out of the spray with only three wheels. And again Murray spoke a classic, "Like Jaws!" as he hit Brundle. So, Prost was confirmed as world champ, while other drivers were crashing, spinning, limping and sulking, but not the Williams-Renault drivers, for Thierry Boutsen pulled out another Canada result and won magnificently in the wet, with Patrese third, with the Benetton driver Alessandro Nannini second. But the story of the race was Satoru Nakajima setting fastest lap in the Lotus Judd and coming fourth, and making those of us who stayed, or were not passed out drunk, cheer our heads off, and we became Nakajap fans that day. What a weekend. I was soaked, but had a blast. What a fantastic memory. That's all for now. Catch you later.
Lucien, thanks for another outstanding historical moment. And now, we're going right to the calendar review with the fourth page.
Okay, last week, what did we do? We were on February. Calendar, February. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, March, it's Nannini. Remember Alessandro Nannini?
Bravo, bravo.
You have to sing because his sister is a big Italian rock and roll star.
She's no Dalida. Da.
Gianna. No, she's no Dalida. But, you know, she can sing and I think she's pretty hard. I've never seen her face. But anyway, okay, this is one of the most beautiful paint schemes that we have seen in the last 30 years. The United Colors of Benetton for March 2012. And it's the Benetton, green in the front, blue with Gillette and Riello heating equipment, Mobil 1, Ford, 7-Up, Camel, Sanyo. Quite a bit of American money here. And what a lovely car this was. And Mr. Nannini won his only race in another very famous epic battle involving Mr. Ayrton Senna, your friend, and your hero, Monsieur Alain Prost. And if I don't need to talk about what happened in that race. Everybody knows that. So this was Nannini's big chance, and he took the lead. Senna was able to continue, made a pit stop, and came back past him. But then for cutting the chicane, he was disqualified, and this was Alessandro Nannini's one and only win. And then, unfortunately, he was involved in a helicopter accident. You know, the blade severed one of his hands, and it was reattached. That pretty much killed his Formula One career. But he did race many years in Germany with Alfa Romeo and did some other stuff. And right now, I understand he is making gourmet coffee and is selling upscale gourmet coffee and is selling worldwide. And I think he's opened a store in Indonesia also. So you can check out on his website. So that is the story on Alessandro Nannini in March 2012 and the one and only calendar available on what website, sir?
F1Weekly.com, Nasser, or GrandPrixWeekly.com, or MotorsportsMondial.com.
There you go, and click on the Buy Now page. You know you want to.
You know you want to. Thanks, Nasser, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And now we'll just go right into the wrap-up. San Francisco Formula One group. They meet, they drink, and they have a great time during the Formula One season. Check them out at sff1.com. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2011 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, contact CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our Facebook and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend or simply like us. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email me at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.